Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio, in cooperation with Scout.com, WarNest.com, and Frat House Sports, this is Inside the War Nest, the show made by Philadelphia Eagles fans for Philadelphia Eagles fans. Have a comment or question? Call us live on the air, 347-826-9964. That's 347-826-9964. And now, to take you through the week that was and the week to come in Eagles football, here are your armchair generals, Jim Williams and Mike McShane, inside the War Nest.
Let's see here. NyQuil, check. Mm-hmm. DayQuil, check. Robitussin, double check. Yeah, I'm ready to go. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the second edition of Inside the War Nest, presented by the good people at WarNest.com. Also brought to you by Frat House Sports, the Frat House Sports blog talk radio page you're listening to us on right now, blogtalkradio.com/FHSports. And, of course, by Scout.com as well. I'm Jim Williams. I'm the one with the cold medicine, and I think I've downed more than enough of it, not just because I'm a little under the weather still, but because last Sunday's game, oh, heartbreak city. Joining me to commiserate for the next hour and also to look ahead to what lies in store this weekend from Frat House Sports, the esteemed Michael J. McShane, Esquire. Good evening, Mike.
Esquire, my goodness, I got promoted.
You got promoted.
What are you doing with all those meds? That's my department.
Well, you know, I figured I couldn't help but take a chip off the old block here. I've got the meds. This has been turning people off. The things that have come out of my nose the last week is just bad news. Well, hey, next week you may not deal with me because I'll have 3 wisdom teeth taken out, so that'll be exciting.
Actually, everything will clear up a lot better at that point because, you know, your sinuses will have a natural way of draining.
Yeah, well, there you go. Dr. Mike will be on in the next hour on Blog Talk Radio.
Exactly, there
but,
you go.
But in the meantime, let's outline what we've got in store for you tonight. We're going to talk about the heartbreaking loss at Arizona Sunday. We'll go over some statistical analysis and some questionable play calling. And that's how we're going to phrase it right now. Also, a little bit later on in the show, around half past, we're going to talk with Patrick Starr. He's scheduled to join us from Scout.com's Texans website, stateofthetexans.com, or you can go to hou.scout.com. But while we have him on, while we have us on, we want to have you on. It's oh so simple to join us. Reach out and touch us, damn it. The number's 347-826-9964. If you have a question about a play, about a moment from Sunday's game, something on the injury front you want to talk about, your hypothesis of where the Eagles fit in the NFC East and the NFC playoff picture, not too early to talk about that, and we will talk about that tonight. 347-826-9964, any old time, give us a ring-a-ling on the ting-a-ling, and we will... make sure you're not a ding-a-ling, and then put you on the air.
There you go.
You can also, I'm a poet, and I don't know it. Also, you can call in via Skype. Click the Skype button on the show page, and you'll get connected to us. I'll see your little screen name, and when we have a moment, we'll chat with you. Speaking of chat, we have a chat room open right now. It's me. It's Mike. We converse back and forth with you. If you have questions or comments, put them in there. And the rest, as they say, is history. And, of course, if you miss the live version of our show on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock, it's available any old time at blogtalkradio.com/FHSports or, of course, at warnest.com. But put it off as long as I can, Mike. We got to talk about it.
I know.
We got to talk about the rough loss on Sunday. If I had told you, Michael, that the Eagles would have gained over 500 yards on offense.
Yeah, really.
And they would lose. You would probably backhand me upside the head, and you'd have full reason to do so. What went wrong in your estimation?
You know, you see this on occasion, but not too darn often, that a team can roll up 500 yards of offense and lose a game. Now, mind you, they only lost by four. You know, it's funny because when you listen to Philadelphia sports fans for the past couple of days, you would have thought that we lost by 24. But we really only lost by four. And considering there were three stats, Jim, that jumped out at me, and one of them we're going to get into, but there were three stats that jumped out at me that, amazingly, we only did lose by four. I mean, because really when it comes right down to it, it should have been more with these numbers right here. How about this number? 0-for-3 in the red zone. All right, there's number one.
Red zone inefficiency. We'll come back to that, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So that's number one. Number two, how about three turnovers? Three turnovers. Two interceptions and a fumble. And then, of course, we're going to get into the 62 passes in a couple of moments. But when you take a look at those three numbers alone, it's amazing that the Eagles only lost by four.
Yeah, it is.
This was an incredibly disappointing performance because, look, it was within our grasp. We had this game. You know, this team was going to, you know, only have one loss in the column. We were going to 6-1. So this was a tough one to handle.
I want to jump right to the first statistical bit of data you gave us, talking about the red zone inefficiency of Philadelphia, 0-for-3 in the red zone. I believe I read somewhere they're at about a 40% conversion rate for touchdowns in the red zone, which is a league worst.
Yep.
What is the problem with this team in the red zone? Is it not rushing the ball? Is it the play calling from Chip Kelly and Pat Shurmur? Or what do you think is the antidote to this?
Well, you know, it's a tough call because you'd almost have to go and look at each one individually. And, you know, I guess you'd need somebody like Ron Jaworski breaking down the film. You know, you'd almost need
spending
that.
Spending 72 hours a day looking at the film, yes.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he would have to break it down. You'd have to say to him, hey, break it down for us on each time that we've not been able to do. But, look, when we take a look at just this past week, and again, we're going to talk about you know, the second guessing of Chip Kelly in a couple of moments as well. When you can't get in on third and inches, okay, from, you know, from that point right there, you can't get in with the tools that they've got. There's something wrong. There is something wrong with this picture.
There absolutely is. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been so much blame placed at the feet of, oh, okay, we don't have Deshaun, or we don't have D-Jack anymore. We don't have Deshaun Jackson. Mm-hmm. Well, the red zone situation is not a D-Jack scenario. So you got to go somewhere else. Where's the problem? But you know, we talked about it last week. How many have I seen off the fingertips of Riley Cooper?
Dozens at this point this season, seemingly.
You know, when they're running the ball, they're running it straight up the middle. You got to go to the outsides. You got to go left. You got to go right.
And they
don't seem to be doing that. So when they are running the ball in those particular circumstances, when you are third and goal, when you are second and nine or second and goal, okay, they're not going strong side.
Right.
They're not setting up a strong side and going that way and sweeping. They seem to be trying to plow it up the middle. And, well, you know, Arizona, we talked about this last week. They're number one against the rush, and they took it quite seriously, didn't they?
just a little bit. Well, and let me go next level with this. You talk about the play selection. Now, you talked about it on the show last week. You figured the Eagles are going to have to pass the football more than they're going to run the football. And we could all understand that. But they passed the ball 62 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 6 followed by a 2. They rushed the ball 26 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my math isn't that great, but you're looking at a 75-25 split.
Yep.
The play calling left much to be desired in terms of how much they pass the ball and how much they run the ball. Simply put, did they throw the ball way too much?
Well, you got to wonder. Here's a better question: was Chip Kelly? Did Chip Kelly dust off the Oregon playbook? I mean, because that really let's get it straight. That looked like college play. You know, that game plan that we had there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going into the game. He knew everything that we knew. They were number one against the rush, Arizona. So he's going to go so heavily as to go, yeah, we're just going to throw the ball 75% of the time, guys. Well, here's the worst part of it. Your quarterback's only completing 58% of them.
Par for the course this season. And the scary thing, when they were running the football.
If you even had a quarterback who could have gotten 60, 62, 63% of those, well, okay, maybe then we, you know, then guess what? We're not looking at this and going, oh, 62 times. Are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? Because he's
just completed 63%
of them. Exactly.
It's the difference between a winner or a loss. But here's the other thing that I think is even more damning. They ran the ball 26 times, and they were effective in doing it. They averaged over 4 yards a carry.
Yeah.
Why not go back to the run and say, hey, you know, we're getting some yardage. We're getting those couple of yards on each carry Shady gets. Why not go back to it? That's the question I keep saying to myself.
I agree with you. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the mechanics of McCoy last week. How it seemed that early on in the season, he was kind of doing that, you know, that left-right, east-west sort of thing. And then what we saw the breakout game against the Giants where he was a little more north and south. And I must admit, on the 21 carries that we did see last week, again, it was a little more of that instant north and south situation that we saw with the Giants. So you sit there as an analyst and you go, okay, better. That's good. All right.
Yeah.
But then they only give it to him 21 times, as you point out, for 83 yards. Listen, what was Chip Kelly's response for not trying to run the quarterback sneak on the third and goal thing goal? Well, we tried it against Dallas last year and it didn't work. Are you kidding me?
That was then. I mean, yet they would allow, I think later in the game, Nick Foles to scramble for a first down on his own in a similar mm-hmm. situation. So hypocrisy is what it is. It's hypocrisy. Now, speaking of Chip Kelly, let's second guess him a little bit towards the end of the game,
mm-hmm.
fourth quarter, third mm-hmm. down and inches from the 1 yard line and the play decision. And ultimately, the undoing, do you go for the field goal? Do you go for the short points at the 2 minute warning? Or do you try to punch it in knowing that if you don't punch it in, at the very worst, you back the opposition up to a point where you can get a safety and the ball back?
There were actually two plays that were, I guess there were really actually three plays that were called into question.
Mm-hmm.
The first play was the indifference by the Philadelphia coaching staff to challenge the spot for Chris Polk, which would have given them a first down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that call was, in my opinion, that was just, you know, there's no excuse for that. They had plenty of time to be able to call that play. In fact, they went into a 2 minute warning knowing that they still could have called that play coming out of the 2 minute warning, where they would have challenged the spot. And the bottom line is Chris Polk would have, if they had challenged the spot would have been moved and they would have had a first down. All right. Now let's forget about that for a moment, because let's go to the third and fourth down situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Chip Kelly, with all due respect, has been in some circles around the Philadelphia media area, been crucified for not going for it. I've been called old school this week. Okay? Maybe I am. But we saw two other teams earlier in the day who were in very, very similar situations. I wish I could recall exactly which teams they were, who were exactly in the same situation, went for it, and gave up points and didn't get any points on the board at all. I do not in leaving points on the field. So I do not question the wisdom of going for the field goal in that particular case.
What you question is the play of Nate Allen not long after that, when
mm-hmm.
he had played a pretty darn good game, all things told, except for that one play in the final 2 minutes where he got burned to a crisp.
Right.
I mean, you know, he can't play a full game of football. I'm convinced he cannot play a full 60 minutes.
Well, and there have been just as many people screaming for his head that have actually been defending him and saying, hey, no, come on, back off. Look, everybody makes a mistake or two here or there in a game. And that's true. That's absolutely true. And, you know, look, for us as fans, it's always a lot more highlighted, a lot more glaring, particularly when you lose in the last 2 minutes of a game, as happened here. So, you know, that's a tough call to make as well. I mean, I have heard people absolutely lambaste this guy and say that they don't ever want to see him in an Eagles jersey again. Well, all right.
Maybe a little strong. It was rumored, heavily rumored, that the Eagles, in addition to looking at Vincent Jackson before the since-passed NFL trading deadline, they were looking also for a safety to potentially fill the void of a departing
Nate
Allen.
They missed the mark with Tampa Bay, and Mark Maron's going over to the Rams. In my opinion, the Rams got him for what, a fifth round pick? Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. That's a steal. That's an absolute steal. I mean, there are always that one or two players that come out of the late rounds that really become the greatest thing known to man. But you know you have something in place, you go for it.
Well, and look, nobody was going to bet the house on Barron's getting in here and, he's going to be the thing that's good. Look, it shores up an area that we already know is a weak point for the Eagles defense. So,
yeah, if you want to weigh in about should the Eagles have made a move at the NFL trade deadline, boy, I feel like we're doing the baseball podcast talking trade deadline with football, huh? But should they have made a move ultimately? Let us know, 347-826-9964. Area code 347-826-9964. It's 2014. Long distance doesn't exist anymore, technically, so you just call. You got the unlimited. Just give us a call. Or if you have the Skype, just click the Skype button and boom, you're right into us almost instantaneously. In about 10 or 12 minutes, we'll be talking with Patrick Starr of stateofthetexans.com. He is the editor, and he actually works also in Houston radio at Sports Talk 790 radio.
Oh, outstanding.
We'll be talking with him in just a little bit, kind of going behind enemy lines, talking about the Houston Texans. So the Eagles are now 5-2. And given where everything, and we'll talk a little bit about the NFC East at large later on in the show this week. 5-2 in the NFC right now isn't a bad place to be. Where do you see the NFC stacking up at this point in time, Michael?
The entire NFC or the NFC East?
You know what? I'll let you do both. I'll let you take the NFC East first, and then we'll broaden it out to the conference, because I truly believe it is up for grabs. There is no definitive team in the NFC as a whole that is setting the world on fire, and you can point to and say, yeah, that's the team that's going to the Super Bowl. I think it's completely wide open.
Yeah, I agree with you. In fact, I led off our program last night, the Red Zone Blitz, right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, with that question.
Listen to it! Go ahead.
Absolutely, where I led off with the question, I said, hey, folks, it just seems to me the AFC is the stronger conference. Make no doubt about that one.
No
the
question.
NFC is wide open. Look at the NFC South, for gosh sakes. Excuse me, that is a wreck. You know, you're leading me into a great point here, Jim, because I wanted to ask you a question, and I'm going to answer yours. But I'm listening to Ron Jaworski tonight on one of the local radio programs that I had on before we got to our program here. And Ron Jaworski, of course, was broadcasting from the Philadelphia region, so obviously, he being a former Eagle, he's going to tout the party line. But let's not forget, Ron Jaworski is an ESPN analyst and a guy that just loves to trumpet how he spends so much time over at NFL Films breaking everything down.
89 hours a day. Yes.
Exactly. Right. There you go. But breaking down that game that we just talked about with the Arizona Cardinals, he made the comment tonight that he truly hopes that the Eagles get a chance to see the Cardinals again, because make no mistake, the Eagles are the better team. And yet, I'm going to tell you, as you talk about the NFC right now, I ranked the Cardinals, power rank-wise, last night as the number one team in the NFC. What do you make of Jaws' comments here?
Well, that's very interesting. Well, let me go to yours, actually, first, because I would tend to agree with you. I think the Cardinals, by default, are the best team in the conference right now, not just by record, but the way they're coached. You look at the makeup of this team, yeah, you've got Larry Fitzgerald, who only last week against us got to show off what he does best. You have a ragtag, motley assortment of players from journeymen to youngsters who are collectively coached well under Bruce Arians and play good, solid, smash-mouth football. That's how they're succeeding. So I'm inclined to agree with you that right now the Cardinals are indeed the best team in the NFC, but that can easily flip-flop. Remember, last week we were all praising, you know, the media pundits were praising Dallas. Oh, Dallas is back. Oh, the big D. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And then they lose to Washington, and we'll talk about that before the end of this. And now they look fallible as opposed to infallible. You look at the NFC West. That's, you know, outside of Arizona, San Francisco does not look like a world beater. They're easily beaten. We know the Seattle Seahawks, after getting off the schneid after a couple of losses that perplexed most people, are not a team that, you know, you can say to the bank is going to go back to the Super Bowl, possibly much less the playoffs at this point. Playoffs?
Right.
And then you got the NFC North, which, okay, it's Green Bay, maybe Chicago, and everybody else. I mean, Detroit I can't take seriously because they're, you know, I can't. I mean, they lost Reggie Bush, Joy Bell, I don't know. But
Green Bay, I think, has to be looked at right now.
As the favorite in that division.
As we go to the midpoint of the season, you would have to look at Green Bay as kind of a quote-unquote sleeper. They're the team, I think, that potentially could sneak up here and really shock everybody in the NFC.
It would be a shock, yet not a shock,
exactly,
because they have the talent, and you know Aaron Rodgers, when healthy, is among the best quarterbacks in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be shocking considering where they came from at the start of this season. But to your point, going back again, the AFC, there are three or four teams that would kick any NFC team's backside.
Yep.
Obviously, the Denver Broncos with some guy named Peyton at the helm. I mean, just I know.
Who's
Peyton
he?
Manning.
Who's he?
Man Crush.
That's what he had. Try to keep your pants on for once.
Lord.
But I honestly think also New England right now, they have gotten hot at the right time. Tom Brady is Tom Terrific. And this has nothing to do with anything, but in the Jersey Football League on Yahoo Sports that I'm in, I'm trying to trade Tom Brady because I have Drew Brees also. So, I got both quarterbacks in my league, so I'm trying to get rid of one of them, namely Brady.
I would move Brees.
Well, the only problem is I don't have another backup quarterback, and Brady still hasn't hit his bye. So that's just me. That's just my logic. But, and I think I have Graham on that team as well, so that's why I would keep Brees also. But, I mean, you look at the AFC, you're absolutely right. They are a stronger conference right now. And speaking of the AFC, we're going to be facing an AFC team in just a couple of days. The Houston Texans, the team, let's talk about them very briefly before we have our guest join us. A Houston Texans team that right now is just one game off the pace in the AFC South. They're, you know, after a tough start early on, they've gotten it together, and the defense has come together, and oh yeah, Arian Foster.
Mm-hmm.
Beastly. I mean, 150 yards last week, like it ain't no thing. As long as he stays healthy and upright, you got to look at the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I'll tell you, I certainly don't want things. I'm not going to intend on things getting adversarial with our guests.
Well, I hope not, because we want to have more guests in the future.
Absolutely, but I've got a couple of really, really tough questions for him. I want to pose to him, and one of them is going to have something to do with his offense. Listen, you can talk Arian Foster all you want, but let's get this one straight. That is the only thing that is propelling Houston up the ladder offensively. Right now, obviously, they are the third-ranked rushing offense in the entire league. But look, let's get it straight. That's Arian Foster. Take a look at their pass offense. They're 18th. Huh? This team is beatable. Houston is beatable.
Do you think they're beatable? We'll see if one Mr. Starr tends to agree with your analysis in just a few minutes when he joins us here. We invite you to join us. By the way, Brandon Hain, you may know him in the chat room. Yeah, Brandon, you know, from Frat House Sports. Exactly.
Oh, that Brandon. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, he's a good guy, even though he likes Tom Brady, the Patriots, and all that happy stuff. Anyway, he's not hating on the Eagles' play calling per se.
Yeah.
He's not the Eagles' play calling, that's for sure. That wasn't effective this past week. See, if you do say something in the chat, we will read it on the air. That's the kind of people we are. Gosh darn it.
Well, and I think that, you know, he's absolutely right, and that's what we were talking about early on. You know, and you brought it up, Jim. You broke it down by percentage. You know, 75-25 pass to run scheme.
Absolutely.
Not effective.
I mentioned it enough times on the other football podcast we do. I'll give them a plug because I'm cheap on CLW83.com, the BS Big Show, we call it.
Sure.
And I've said this for years and years and years. Barring some freak occurrences and some outliers, when you throw the ball 50 or more times, you're probably going to lose.
You got it.
How often do you see, unless a game goes overtime, somebody, a quarterback, throwing the ball 50 times in a game, how often do they win? Seldom. Seldom. You are one-sided. You are making your offense one-dimensional and not predictable at all. Oh, it's a pass to a wide receiver. Oh, here's a pass to a tight end. Oh, the running back gets a screen. It's still a pass.
Yep.
It does.
Yep.
I'm not looking for 50-50. That's foolhardy to believe we're going to get. I mean, this is not a running backs league anymore, in my opinion.
I was going to say, that's not the kind of league that we're dealing with any longer. You're right.
10 years ago it was, and maybe even 5 years ago it was.
And it
but
might
now,
go back to being that way. There may come a point when
it might
revert. Yeah.
It, you know, everything, it's like the bell curve of life, if you will. You don't know exactly how that's going to go. But right now, it's a pass first, pass second, pass third, pass fourth league. And I'm not a big fan of that because I think the run sets up the pass. That's just me. Maybe I'm old school like you with that, but I don't know. Well, anyway, Eagles are 5-2. Go ahead.
Your stat there. By the way, your belief. You know, if you're going to pass the ball 50 plus times in a game, you're going to lose. I don't know whether you heard it or not, but I'll confirm it for you.
Okay.
Monday night, I'm listening. Sal Palantonio comes on. Using the Eagles as an example, in fact, he stated, there is nowhere you can point statistically to any team throwing the ball 60-plus times ever and winning in the NFL. It's never happened.
Which makes the fact that the Eagles losing by four, it makes it that much more remarkable, really, when you get right down to it.
Bingo.
To a certain degree. I mean, you have to at the very least, keep things honest. That's what I call it. That's what I consider it. The run keeps the offense honest. It keeps the defense thinking, maybe I don't want to go man-to-man. Maybe I don't want to go prevent. Maybe I got a blitz. I don't know. One other thing we want to talk about, speaking of blitzing and what have you, big news in the last couple of days with injuries for the Philadelphia Eagles, Todd Harriman's, the offensive guard, he pulled a muscle in his bicep. Ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch. But the more damning thing is, he's going to try to play through this. And according to league sources and league pundits, this is almost unheard of. You can't legitimately play through this. He has to have season-ending surgery, but he's not going to go through it. Do you think he's being foolhardy right now?
In fact, it's a torn bicep. And the question that was raised tonight was, how in the world is he going to be able to handle J.J. Watt?
Exactly.
The other suspicion is that this is a temporary measure exclusively for this week, that in fact – Harriman's will, in fact, back off next week, and he will probably end his season at that point, that this is strictly for this week. Because as you well know, Jim, and I'm sure you probably got the updated injury report and what have you, and you're ready to rock and roll on that, but there was a lot of good news for the Eagles today. Apparently we got, we do have Harriman's playing injured, Kelsey is expected to be back, Sproles is expected to be back, And I think we're supposed to get a full offensive line back in place by next week. So
looking that way, certainly looking that way, while we have a moment, since you set it up, I'll go ahead and give you the injury report, brought to you still by nobody. That may change. You never know. The only two players who did not play, Nate Allen, we talked about him. He had a hamstring injury. Brandon Boykin, the corner, with a hamstring injury. The only other Eagle of note that was limited in practice is wide receiver Brad Smith, still recovering from a groin injury. Meanwhile, those who were full participants in practice, Todd Harriman, as we mentioned, with a biceps injury, Jason Kelce, the center, eyeing a return maybe as early as this week, a week or so ahead of schedule, that sports hernia. Michael Kendricks, who we saw get about 20 or so plays in last Sunday, calf injury, he was a full participant. Jeff Mail, wide receiver with a foot injury. D'Amico Ryans, these are all full practice participants, I'm saying. D'Amico Ryans, who Chip Kelly is praising to the nth degree, and understandably so, groin injury. Darren Sproles. Oh, no disrespect to Chris Polk. I think we really want to see Darren Sproles back if he's good to go with that MCL. And Jalen Watkins, the corner, with a wrist injury. They are all good to go. They are all full practice participants at Wednesday at the NovaCare Complex. So, you know, the team is starting to get healthy at the right time, starting to get healthy when they're on a 3 out of 4 on the road swing here against a couple of teams that are going to pose some problems, potentially, to Philadelphia, whether it be tenacious defense or bigger obstacles on offense. It would be really nice if we can get the offensive line healthy and protecting Nick Foles so that he doesn't have to worry about planting on his back foot, wouldn't it?
Yeah, really. And I think, I've heard rumors, Jim, that is a continuation of that shoulder injury, that's really what that's all about. And, you know, it was if you go and if you Google up the pictures, some of the action pictures from this past Sunday's game against Arizona, to see Foles in the back in the pocket at different times, or, you know, back in the shotgun, as so often is the case anymore.
Right.
And to see him releasing that ball, Jim, it is awkward looking.
Yeah.
It is just flat out awkward looking. He is flat footed. It looks like he's pushing the ball. He's not releasing
forcing
it. Somebody made the comment the other day. This guy just, something is wrong. You know, he is not throwing the ball like a quarterback, like even a high school quarterback would, where they're going to step into the ball and they're going to fire it. He is launching it from behind, almost as if he's pushing a shot put. I mean, it is just really, it's not only ineffective, it's ugly.
and flawed mechanics make you more prone to injuries, don't they? I mean, he's setting himself up for another major injury. And then what happens? Matt Barkley time, anybody?
Interceptions, as we well know.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I rattled off the stat last week that of the quarterbacks with winning records under their belt, by far and away, Nick Foles has the lowest quarterback rating of any winning quarterback in the league.
Exactly.
And that's not by accident. I mean, he's...
Oh, he's
not
it.
Making. Well, I don't know if that's the way we want to coach it here and couch it on the show, but yeah, I mean, he's earned it because he's making poor decisions. That's part of it, and secondly, he's just forcing the throws, and he's mechanically, you know, disinclined, if you will, like you mentioned. I mean, it's something that I've seen in the press conferences. Pat Shurmur has been working on with Foles, but it doesn't seem to be working out. Then again, Pat Shurmur, enough said, but we won't go there. His history with the Browns and other organizations that he kind of, but we'll see. We'll see. We're still waiting for Patrick Starr to join us on the phone. Just sent him an email. He should be joining us shortly.
Okay, there you go.
To talk about the game with the Houston Texans coming up this Sunday. Going to be in Houston at the, as I call it now, the new big TV stadium. Their Jumbotron is now bigger than the one in Dallas, as I understand. So good for you.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, well, everything's bigger in Texas, including the,
well,
I can't say that. No, you can't say that. Not the kind of not the kind of show we do. In fact, I believe Patrick is ready to join us now. Patrick, is that you?
Yes, this is me. How y'all guys doing?
Real good. How you doing? Patrick Starr joining us from stateofthetexans.com, a fellow scout.com site. He's also credentialed media for the Texans, part of the scout.com network. And, of course, for those of you in the Houston area, you may hear him from time to time on Sports Talk 790 Radio out of Houston. What's good down there, good sir?
Well, the Texans kind of got back on a roll today and got back into their first week of practice preparing for the Eagles. So kind of went to go talk to see what the locker room had to say and see how they're preparing for this game. Obviously, they're coming off a much-needed win against the Tennessee Titans, a team they should beat. But there's a lot, you know, as they say, a lot riding going into this game. But this is an important game. The Texans have to prove they can beat upper-end teams, and that's exactly what the Eagles are right now.
And it's an important game also from the aspect that Indianapolis, with their, to say, rough loss against, of all teams, the Pittsburgh Steelers, would be a grand understatement. Mike and I talked about it. You guys are right in the thick of the AFC South right now and kind of can control your own fate a little bit here if you can string a couple more wins together. So a lot to play for down there for sure.
Yeah, and the one thing that we always look at and the one thing that we try to tell our readers is that, you know, the Texans are maybe 4 or 5 plays against the Colts and the Cowboys from winning those games combined, but they're also 4 plays away from losing even 2 extra games against the Bills and you know, the Redskins. So the Texans have been exactly where a lot expected them to be. A lot of it falls on Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I think a lot of this, the bigger picture is that you've got a team that has been built under Gary Kubiak and what he wanted in his system, along with Wade Phillips, and with both of them gone. You're trying to recreate, retrain an entire new team, so to speak. I think that there's only like maybe 20 players left from last year's team, so it's been a pretty big turnover for the most part. And so these players are still learning how to make this happen. And you guys know as well as I do, longevity and not having as much change from year to year really help out teams. And the Texans are in that boat right now where they're kind of learning on the run and trying to win at the same time.
Consistency is a virtue. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Patrick, let me throw out, since you brought up Ryan Fitzpatrick, let me just stay there for a moment. There have been a lot of rumors over the past, I would say, easily 2.5 weeks now, that, in fact, the Texans are going to make that change. Fitzpatrick is going to be out. Ryan Mallett's going to be in. And yet we continue to see Fitzpatrick kind of stay the course. Now, from an outsider's perspective, Fitzpatrick's been serviceable. He's not been horrible. Is there a great deal of sentiment down there that you guys have to make a move to young Ryan Mallett?
Okay, so there's actually 2 sides to this that you kind of got to understand. And like you said, from an outsider looking in. And Texans fans are quarterback hungry, especially for what happened last year and having quarterbacks just fall apart in front of their eyes, and the hometown hopeful didn't work out, and now you're expecting them to fix it, and it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. So when Ryan Fitzpatrick stepped through the stadium, you know, doors, and this is our guy, there was a lot of concern, like, okay, what are we trying to accomplish here? This Ryan Mallett, the Texans realized that they did not have a backup quarterback as this went on. T.J. Yates was traded. They obviously felt that he wasn't, you know, worthy. Case Keenum was cut at the last minute. They needed to move on from him. They recently drafted Tom Savage, who's nowhere close. So they needed a good backup. You know, it was almost like written in stone. You knew that Ryan Mallett was going to be here before the season even started. You know, and there was a few people that really felt that this was going to happen during draft time. It didn't, but it, you know, came to light later on. I'm probably going to shatter some dreams, but I don't think that the Texans are going to make the move to Ryan Mallett unless 2 things happen. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but Ryan Fitzpatrick gets hurt or the Texans are completely out of the playoff race. I think the Texans and Bill O'Brien are confident with what Ryan Fitzpatrick is doing. Bill O'Brien's also one of those guys that he holds his quarterback to a higher standard, but he also realizes too that if your offensive line is not protecting well enough, or if the defense is putting them bad holes, or if Andre Johnson or DeAndre Hopkins are having crucial fumbles late in the, those aren't Ryan Fitzpatrick issues. Is he a problem? Mm-hmm. Yes. Is he the main problem? No. And that's how Bill O'Brien is looking at this. He wants this team to keep growing. Offensively, they've gotten better from week one to week eight, which is a positive, but it's Ryan Fitzpatrick's show until it's all said and done.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not a Ryan Fitzpatrick hater. In fact, I'm the opposite. I've always kind of liked the guy and felt he really wasn't ever really given a chance. I'm just curious, though, is the fan base there, are you hearing, because you're in talk radio, are you hearing a fan base down there that is actually saying, hey, we want this guy out, get the young kid in?
Well, yeah, without a doubt. It's always going to be like that. Ryan Fitzpatrick is the family van, and it's not very exciting. It's getting the job done. I mean, the crazy thing when you look at Ryan Fitzpatrick, and this is in, you know, with our site, and when we put this out and we tweet it out and we talk about it, a lot of people don't want to hear it, but here's the absolute truth about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He is setting career highs in completion percentage.
Right.
He has the highest quarterback rating of his career right now, and mm-hmm. his yards per attempt are the highest they've ever been. These are three stats that he is playing above average than he has ever done in offenses that were more wide open than what he's doing here in Houston. So there is translation of what Bill O'Brien is trying to accomplish offensively with Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's happening, but the only problem is that Ryan Fitzpatrick is, as I say, is running on full tilt. He has it in the red, and he's playing at a high level, but it's just not enough for him to be that quarterback that takes you the entire way.
Sure.
That can make those game-changing plays by himself. And that's the reality of Ryan Fitzpatrick. He is playing at the best level he has, but it's just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the other part of the offense comes into play, and that's where Arian Foster comes in. And, and they've had a recipe where you sit there and look and say, you know, this could be pretty good if all these things go right. That's kind of how they're banking on the season.
And I would imagine everybody down there is just keeping your fingers crossed that nothing goes wrong with Arian Foster and gets hurt, because there might just go your offense.
Yeah, and it came to light when he missed the New York Giants game. Alfred Blue, who's probably the best rookie of the class to this point out of LSU, you know, he missed some holes. But Arian Foster makes offensive line so much better with his ability to see cutbacks, to, you know, to his vision is unmatched. And it's kind of that thing, you know, maybe Arian wasn't that good. He was breaking down. But then you realize when he gets back in the lineup and he's doing what he's doing, you're like, okay, he's on a different level. And I think you can add Shady McCoy and you know, and Arian Foster, you got probably two of the top four backs in the NFL fixing to square up on Sunday. And it's an exciting time because Arian Foster, what he's doing is pretty special. You know, he was subbed in and out after the Buffalo game because they're still worried about his hamstring. But he has, you know, in his six games, he has over 100 yards. In five of his seven games, he's had runs for over 30 yards in each game. So he's not only grinding it out, he's breaking some big runs that we haven't seen from him before. He's healthy. He looks good. He had the day off today. And Bill O'Brien knows. He's preserving him. He knows what mm-hmm. he has to do with Arian. And Arian has taken to Bill O'Brien very well, despite everything that's gone on. But he's been everything you want the Texans to be.
Talk to us about Clowney. The word up here is, okay, that's great. Yeah, he'll be playing this week. But, come on, he's going to be limited. He didn't have the greatest game last week. And he was limited use there, and he'll probably continue to be limited use in what? This will be his third game of the season?
Well, second and a half. Second and a half, yeah. You know, I will tell you this. Jadavian is as special as you can get. And now, understand what I'm fixing to say, and I say this with all due respect to J.J. Watt. Jadavian Clowney is the best athlete on the field out of everybody that suits up for the Texans.
Wow.
What he can do, how he does it, how fast he does it, is unmatched. Now, you can pull up all your YouTube clips. You can pull out everything you want and go look at this. And, oh, yeah, you know, the hit that he had against Michigan. But to see it in real life, see how much ground he covers, is unreal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that he's still a young pup. He's still learning the game. And he's actually doing things with just raw ability. Now, with due respect to J.J. Watt, I'm not downplaying who he is. He's just on a different planet. J.J. Watt is no doubt the best football player on that roster.
Mm-hmm.
I look at him as two different entities. But with Clowney, you can see how much difference it made against the Tennessee Titans. And the reason why, you can line Clowney and Watt opposite ends, and everything completely changes defensively for the Texans. They're able to do a little more things on the back end where they don't have to worry about just J.J. I mean, there was times where they're even sending two guys at Clowney just because they were worried about his speed off the edge. And he's
right.
Not completely healthy either. And that's mm-hmm. the crazy thing about it. He still has more burst and everything else than everybody on the line, even at times than J.J. Watt with that bum knee, to get off the line just to, you know, close the pocket down, to get quarterbacks off their mark. That's what he's doing, and that's what he did in Tennessee. He did play over half the defensive snaps. So, yeah, he's going to be kind of, but, you know, he's going to be on the field a lot for Philadelphia, just the way you guys run the offense. Y'all are spread out. He's going to be out there. And so it's going to be really interesting and on how much he takes a step forward. He was limited today. He had a little soreness from his knee, but that's expected. But, you know, if
mm-hmm.
a good off season, getting him healthy, the sky's the limit for Jadeveon Clowney. And it's exciting to see what him and J.J. Watt can possibly be these coming seasons.
We are talking with Patrick Starr, the editor of State of the Texans, and, of course, with Sports Talk 790 in Houston here on Inside the War Nest, presented by WarNest.com. Jim Williams with Mike McShane. So you've talked a little bit about the running game that both teams have. Of course, one other factor with the Philadelphia side of things is that Darren Sproles is back in practicing and is more than likely going to participate in action this coming Sunday. How does the Houston defense counteract not just Shady, but Darren Sproles as well?
Well, I talked to he's their nickel cornerback, A.J. Boye. He's in his second year out of UCF, up-and-coming defensive back. And I kind of talked to him what they were expecting from the Eagles. He said that they're the way he said, you know, Riley Cooper's a big target. You know, he talked about, you know, his size is something that they always had, that they're worried about with Riley. And he said Jeremy Maclin, with what he's able mm-hmm. to do and get vertical, they said they're very aware of that. The Matthews kid, the Texans are really high on him and how he's able to play. Boye said that, you know, he's one guy that he watched all through college, and, you know, he's kind of excited this weekend to go up against them, because these are guys that really, you know, push the bar when it comes to wide receivers as a group. He compared them to the Indianapolis Colts wide receivers, but he stopped all that really quick, and he said, to be honest, he goes, there's two guys that really have our attention, and that's Shady McCoy and Darren Sproles. And it's pretty
wow.
apparent that they're really aware of the athleticism that's coming out of the backfield, and they said they're going to try and stop the run first, and they'll worry about the rest later. And that's how Romeo Crennel wants to do things.
That's interesting, because, I mean, your team 16th against the rush defense. Obviously, they're going to place an emphasis there. You're 31st against the pass. I would think you'd want to be placing an emphasis on Maclin.
Well, definitely, but you also got to remember who you're coming from. You're coming from an old-school defensive coordinator in Romeo Crennel, and that's the Texans' main thing. And you can look at them, I call it the Ryan Pickett effect. They signed Ryan Pickett off the couch, pretty much. And through 3 weeks without Ryan Pickett as their starting nose tackle, now, Ryan Pickett's going to see some action in their four-man front just to occupy some blockers. But with Ryan Pickett not with the Texans, the opponents through the first 3 weeks were averaging 152 yards a game on the ground against the Texans. Enter Ryan Pickett, these last five games, that number's dropped to 88.2 yards a game. So the Texans have taken a huge step, but it's because their numbers were so bad early. They were terrible early that it's kind of skewed now. But if you look at it from that point of view, The Texans have dropped their average rush those first three games, what, 5.2. Now it's like 3.2, 3.4 in there. So they've made a concerted effort to stop the run. And if you look at the big picture, they have really made the difference. On the football field, defensively, even against the Titans tried to spread them out. Obviously, they don't have weapons like Philadelphia. But we're going to stop the run. We're going to play our cover two zone against you, and we're going to make you beat us and try to pick us apart. And that's, they're going to give the underneath all day. But as long as Jeremy Maclin doesn't get vertical, I think everything might be okay.
And so in the end, in the end, it's going to come out being which way, Patrick? Because right now Philadelphia is a 2-point favorite going into Houston, which I'm going to be honest with you. A lot of us here in Philadelphia, we're not giving too much credence to that.
Well, let me tell you this. It's going to be a high-emotion game, and here's the reason why. D'Amico Ryans talked to him on the conference call today, Connor Barwin, too. And obviously, you know, the running joke in Houston, you know, the Philadelphias are like – Philadelphia is the adopted team of the Texans because, hell, y'all got 7-8 guys that are on the team. And so there's actually a connection. So I really feel that this game is going to be a little bit maybe more personal. I know it's going to be personal for D'Amico as much as Houston loves him. You know, he got traded. That was a huge pickup for you guys. Connor Barwin, who's actually been productive for the most part for you guys. I mean, y'all have some guys that have something to prove. And so I think it's going to be a little bit bigger than what some think of. Now, same thing with you. I think a lot of things fall on Nick Foles and how he's going to produce on Sunday. You know, Bill O'Brien pointed out that he's not as arcade game mode as he was last year compared to this year. So they have an idea on how they want to defend Foles, obviously. Now, I still see the Eagles, which is his amount of the Houston Texans defense has a knack for just giving up big plays at the worst moment. And Jeremy Maclin, that's probably their biggest thing that they have to watch, getting vertical, because there's just too many things that the Texans do defensively that make you think, what are you guys looking at? And his ability to stretch the field is a scary thing because they really don't have any much speed on the back half of their secondary, and if they can't control him, it could be a long, long, long night.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game.
The Eagles playmakers is ultimately what's going to make the difference. I think the Eagles are actually going to win this game.
Oh, okay. That's a vote of confidence we'll take. Before we get out of here with you, we want you to plug where we can see and hear you. So go ahead, by all means. Floor is yours.
Very well. You can find us on stateofthetexans.com. You can type it in or go to Houston Scout, on our Scout network. You can hear me in the trenches with former NFLers, Indy Kalu and Greg Cook, whenever they need me. You can follow me on Twitter at Pat, the letter D in stat. We're there always talking Texans as much as we can and whatever else. But ultimately, that's kind of where you can find us. And we're always updating, trying to do things a little bit different, and that's pretty much how we are.
Covered over there on Twitter, Pat.
I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
You can
Good
find
stuff.
Me over. Are you following me?
here we go with that. That's going to change very soon. But Mike's very social media savvy, as you can no doubt tell.
Frat House Mike. Right. At Frat House Mike.
Yeah, I'm at Jay Williams on air. There we go. We got all our Twitter handles out there.
There you go.
Patrick,
we got them all.
Thanks for joining us, giving us some insights from behind enemy lines. We wish you the very best of luck this week and the rest of the season with your team and with everything at Scout.com's State of the Texans.
Hey, I appreciate it, fellas.
Thanks,
Patrick. All right, take care now, Patrick. Bye-bye. Patrick Starr, ladies and gentlemen, from stateofthetexans.com. Good guy. And he actually has a vote of confidence for the Eagles winning this game.
How do you like that? How do you like that one?
He calls them as he sees them. And you can still call us in the final 5 minutes here. 347-826-9964, 347-826-9964. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was going to say, you got to appreciate that. You know something? We do that on Frat House Sports all the time.
Right.
Listen, I'm not afraid to show my colors. But the bottom line is, if I don't really believe that my team's got a chance, I'm going to say it outright. And I think that's tremendously refreshing that he's not going to sit there and just be a homer. So I'm going to tell you right now, Jim, I don't know about you, but a two-point favorite going into Houston, I'm not sitting pretty on that one going, oh, yeah, we've got this one.
No, I think this is going to be this is going to come down to the final 2 minutes again. I really think it is. I think Philadelphia can win this football game on a defensive stand in the final 2 minutes. That's what it's going to have to come down to, because you're going to have to shut down Arian Foster if Houston's behind.
Yep.
And I think the Eagles, they have something to prove. Nate Allen has something to prove to people. And if there was any place in time where he could show something to people, it would be in a situation in the final couple of minutes of the football game where he can prove he can guard Andre Johnson or any of the other wide receivers Houston has at their disposal. So I'd look at this as a close game, something within 6 points, maybe 3 points. But I think Philadelphia can win this and get their sixth win of the season. What do you see?
Well, I see. I agreed. I made the prediction that the Eagles would win by three last week, but I don't want to sound like the homer, but no,
right.
I think that the Eagles can win this. I have a little more confidence in our rushing defense than I do in our passing defense.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I'm hoping that we can bottle Arian Foster up somewhat. That's
contain him, not you. To use the Dan Patrick line, you can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
Bingo. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, you got that one absolutely right. So if that's the case, but, the funny thing is, and one of the things that I wanted to bring up early on in the program, and I forgot, but that's all right, because I'm sure we'll be able to do it again next week, is that I have never in my life come across a team that is 5-2 and so many people are worried about them as a team.
Agreed.
It just seems, it almost feels like it should be a 2-5 team. And the worry comes from the offensive side of the ball. And that's exactly what we're just not sure is going to show up on
the
Houston field.
You bring that up, that's a scary thing, because on paper or going into the season, even the first couple of weeks, the major concern was defense. We knew Shady McCoy was going to rattle off yards. We knew Darren Sproles could be a factor on the offense. Macklin, if healthy, is a good wide receiver. It's the defense that was suspect, and by and large, save for, of course, a couple of key plays here and there, the defense has actually held down the fort pretty decently this season.
Yep.
So,
and we saw that from about midpoint last season on, where suddenly the defensive side of the ball came alive at about midseason, and suddenly everybody's sitting there going, hey, this defense isn't too bad.
Right. Let me ask you quickly, Darren Sproles, if he plays, and it looks like all signs are, barring some freak occurrence in practice the rest of the week, he will play. What kind of factor will he play?
Limited, I believe. I continue to think it's still going to be somewhat limited. You might see some punt returns and some kick returns, maybe a handful of plays in between, but I think you're still going to see McCoy's going to be carrying the rock on Sunday.
You figure caution is the better part of valor here. Okay.
That's how I would roll with it. That's just my personal opinion.
I see. I think Sproles could be the X factor. I think he gets one big pass, one big gainer, and it's over. I think it could be a one, like he was a few weeks back in the Monday Nighter. A big one play, and it sets everything up. So we'll see about that.
I'm looking for Macklin to be that X factor.
Oh, I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Against the 31st pass defense, that's what I'm looking for.
Absolutely. Sounds very, very enticing. Well, the game's on at 1 o'clock, I do believe, Sunday afternoon.
Correct.
We want you to take a look at it, and in the lead-up to it, stay with WarNest.com. We'll have the injury updates. We'll have the late inactives. We'll have game status stuff. We'll have statistical analysis. Justin Henry's all over that. He's all about them digits, No letters, I don't know. But give a look at warrenest.com throughout the week. Join us in the forums during the game. I may not be there because I'm going to be laid up with wisdom teeth pulled out of my mouth and blood everywhere, so you don't want to see that, folks.
Halloween.
But, happy Halloween. I'll just show out the wisdom teeth and scare the kids. Join us again next Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern. Hopefully I'll be here. Mike, I know we'll be here. Hopefully you'll be there. I'm Jim Williams. Go Eagles, EAGLES Eagles. We'll see you next week. Inside the War Nest. So long, everybody.